Hello and welcome to another episode of the NBCSports.com College Basketball Talk Podcast. My name is Rob Doster. It is Tuesday, July 10th. I have a fun show on the way for you today. I was joined by Brian Snow of 24/7 Sports to help me walk through the current July live evaluation period, which begins on Wednesday, and the upcoming changes that are expected to be put into place for future July live evaluation periods based on recommendations that were made by the NABC to Condoleezza Rice's Commission on College Basketball. It's a good conversation. It's going to put into play a lot of the suggestions that were made and what is wrong with them. And before we get into that, I have to make the usual ask. If you enjoy what you hear on this podcast, please give us a five-star rating, give us a five-star review, say nice things about me. It is the best way to help this podcast grow, to get it more listeners, and to be able to rise in the ranks of whatever podcast app that you actually use. So if you could do that for us, if you like what you hear today, I would greatly appreciate it. Now let's get into that conversation with Brian Snow. And now I am excited to welcome back onto the show America's favorite podcast guest, one Brian Snow from 24/7 Sports. Snow, what's going on, my man? How are you doing?
I'm just getting ready to travel all month.
What's your schedule? Where are you going to be? Where am I going to see you?
All right, Wednesday, Thursday, I'm in Atlanta. Then Friday morning, I fly to New York until Sunday. Then I fly back home. Then next Wednesday morning, I fly out to L.A. for 6 days before then flying directly to Vegas for another five, and then I get to come home.
So I'm not going to see you at all then, huh? That's too bad.
I'm going to be at Peach Jam,
and then I'm going to be bouncing around some of these events in Philly, the Elevate Hoop stuff. No, Vegas crushed for me. I know my scout. As you like to say, I know my scout, and I know what happens if I go to Vegas.
You get divorced.
Yes. And probably fired, and probably end up broke. It's not a good thing, you know?
Which of those do not add up. Which of those is the worst?
My wife doesn't listen to the podcast, so I'm going to say fired.
Okay.
All right, so the interesting thing about this July, for people that don't know, is it may be the last time that we are able to go on the road for some of these AAU tournaments and some of these events like the Peach Jam, like Vegas, and actually see coaches at the games and at the events. Allow me 1 second, Snow, to just kind of set this up for people. There has been a committee with the NABC, which is the National Association of Basketball Coaches, which has made a recommendation to Condoleezza Rice's Commission on College Basketball to change the way that summer basketball is set up and change the way that coaches are allowed to access these events. The recommendations that they are making is that coaches will no longer be allowed to attend AAU tournaments in the summer, in July. Instead, what they're going to do is create more availability for coaches to see players in April and in June at high school events that are certified. And the recommendation is that instead of having AAU tournaments, what there is going to be is essentially a week's worth of camps. Regional starts with regional, four regional camps, and the best players from those regional camps end up making it to an elite camp in July. And those are the only events that coaches are allowed to attend and scout players at. And the goal is to have that implemented as early as next summer. I know you hate this as much as I do, so just kind of take me through what you think is the biggest flaw in this entire process.
Yeah, I mean, to me, the first of all, when you talk about it, it's if you're going to change something, you're viewing something as a problem. You should be addressing the problem. Like, that's common sense, right?
Yes, you would think.
And we're not addressing any problem. It's making a PR change to try to fool stupid people who don't understand what's happening.
Well, like, and anytime elaborate on that. Explain that to me.
Because, first of all, who controls a recruitment really has nothing to do with when coaches are watching them. Like, for instance, the NABC, which is led by Bill Self, has come up with these recommendations. And one of the things they've said, and these guys know this isn't true, but they're saying it because they know it's what Condoleezza Rice and other people in the mainstream media who don't pay attention want to hear, is that we're going to go out in June to give the power back to high school coaches. That's not true. Like, who controls a recruitment is who the parent wants to control a recruitment. And college coaches going to a high school event isn't going to change who the parent trusts to control the recruitment of their son. Now, the parent may trust nobody and control it themselves. In fact, a lot are that way, contrary to popular belief. And, you know, and then if there's some hanger-on giving them money and that's why the parent trusts them, guess what? A high school event being open to coaches in June isn't changing that either. So it's just these high school coaches have kids. Most of them are teachers. So they're in the building with them September, October, and then the beginning of November. And then they're actually coaching them middle of November, December, January, February, and some of March. I'm no math major, but that's 8 months. And then every high school coach basically in the country has their kids in June. So that's 9 months. So if these high school coaches already can't control a kid's recruitment and they're around them for 9 months, exactly what the heck is going to change?
Well, nothing. Nothing's going to change. And I think the point that people are missing with this is that I just don't expect kids to be all that willing to go to these camps, and especially if it's just 6 days in the month of July. You know, there's still, like you said, the high school basketball season is November through basically March, right? I think there are limits in a lot of states on how many months you're actually allowed to have between the first practice and the state title game. So let's say the max is probably 6 months for any high school in the country, right? Well, these elite basketball prospects aren't going to stop playing for 6 months. They're going to need someplace else to play. So just because coaches aren't allowed to be at these events doesn't mean that these events aren't going to be taking place. They're just going to be played without the coaches in attendance. This doesn't change anything in the process of how a kid goes from being a elite prospect as a freshman in high school to a freshman in college.
Rob, to give more context on what you said to the people listening who probably aren't aware of all the ins and outs, roughly about 10 years ago, I don't remember the exact number, but roughly about 10 years ago, the NABC, I believe, voted to take away the month of April, meaning coaches could not go out in April for AAU weekends. And when I say AAU, I do not mean Amateur Athletic Union. I don't need to get tweeted at by them. I mean grassroots summer basketball or non-scholastic basketball. So all you Johnny technicalities out there, just understand what I mean.
Yeah, let me clarify that real quick. AAU basketball is like a separate entity from what the EYBL is and what the Under Armour Association is and Adidas Circuit. But AAU is kind of the term that people use for grassroots basketball. So understand that AAU is a specific league that gets played in the summer. There are state tournaments, and you go to a national tournament. I think it's in Orlando, right? And then there are the grassroots teams that people play with, like EYBL and all that kind of stuff. But instead of just referring to it as grassroots, people call it AAU. It's kind of a colloquialism, and I don't think that's ever going away. Continue, Snow.
Yeah, so they took away April, meaning coaches couldn't go out to these events. Literally nothing changed. Those events still happened. The players were there. The scouts were there. The shoe companies were there. The agents were there. Everybody was there but college coaches. So after, I think, 2 years, maybe it was three, they said, this is stupid. The events are going on. They're playing. Why aren't we there? So guess what? They came back. Again, nothing is going to change. You start talking about, what are those camps, 6 days in July? Guess what? Peach Jam's still going to happen at the beginning of July. Under Armour Finals, Adidas Finale, whatever they want to call it. They're still going to happen at the beginning of July, and then Vegas is still going to happen at the end of July, whether coaches are there or not, because these kids don't need coaches to play in front of. Quite honestly, the only thing these regulations do, and I don't even think this is a good thing, it makes me more powerful. Because now coaches are going to be asking me, what did you see? What did you see? What about this? Because they know you can't evaluate a kid at a camp. It's a terrible setting. So basically, they're wasting their time for 6 days. Now, you can argue they're wasting their time now, and I wouldn't necessarily disagree, but they're certainly wasting their time watching them at a camp. So now, coaches are going to be taking the opinion of people like myself, doing more watching of video. And by the way, they'll deny this in public. Trust me, it's true. And And I don't see how that's a good thing for anybody. Like, how is it good for a coach to have to rely on a person like me more than before? I just don't see how that's beneficial.
And I think the other point that people might miss in all this is that the knock on AAU is, you know, it's poorly played, or they play like 18 games in a day or whatever it ends up being. But anybody
Which isn't true, by the way.
It's not true. And anybody that's actually been to something like Peach Jam or been to some of the big Las Vegas tournaments or any of these big AAU tournaments is that these kids like actually care about that kind of a stuff. There's a prestige that comes with winning Peach Jam. You know, like I'm doing a story on Cole Anthony, and one of the things that he's talking about is how he wants to finally win Peach Jam. He went there as a sophomore on a team with Mo Bamba and Quade Green and made it to the finals and lost to Trae Young and Michael Porter. They went there last year, and I believe they didn't make it out of pool play. So now, as a senior, he wants to go down to Peach Jam and win it. There's a prestige that comes with that. And the EYBL, like these kids, every once in a while you'll see them kind of bouncing around programs, but for the most part, they kind of stay together. And they kind of play together every summer, and you actually see them running sets, and it's competitive, and they're playing hard. And the amount of Division I players on every team is more, it's more focused and more centralized, which means that instead of having one superstar and a bunch of guys that are going to end up playing in like the MEAC or Division II, you have a bunch of guys that are going to be playing high major basketball. You'll have like five starters on each team that will be on the floor will be high major prospects. And I don't see how that's a bad thing when it's super competitive. The kids are playing together. They're running sets. A lot of the AAU coaches at that level are guys that have played, you know, high major basketball. Some have played in the NBA. Some of these guys are just really good amateur level coaches. And yes, they're probably involved in this a little bit because of the money that they can make. And there's a financial incentive. But when it comes down to it, there needs to be a financial incentive for people that are better at their job to be able to go to what that job is, if that makes sense, right? Like, you can't...
I don't know many high school coaches coaching for free.
No, they don't coach for free. And a lot of those guys end up... I mean, the way it kind of works is you'll get, like, a stipend, right? You'll be working... maybe that's at the lower level. But whatever the case is, if you want to be able to hire a better candidate and a better coach, you have to be able to pay a better salary. Like, that works in basically every industry. So why is it a problem when we look at it in AAU? Now, that doesn't mean that every AAU coach is great or every coach in the EYBL is doesn't have ulterior motives with this kind of thing. I get it. I understand why coaches are kind of concerned about that, but I don't think as a whole that it is necessarily the worst. Like, I'll give you an example, and Snowy, I'm sure that you know all about this. There is one AAU program in New York that kind of runs a combine. And it's going to be the last day of the second live period, and they're going to be charging coaches $300 to get in the door. But you get a discount rate if you send all three coaches from your staff. You get $700, $200 off to get all three of them in. But that's still $700 that you got to spend to get in the door and get a packet, which you're not going to need because you're going there specifically for a kid that you're already trying to evaluate. And all that is money going into that coach's and that program's pocket. So I understand why people might want to get something like that out of the game. But it doesn't mean that blowing up the system of AAU and blowing up the shoe companies that invest all of this money in all of this infrastructure into the sport is a bad thing. Am I off base?
Yeah, and quite honestly, like, here's the reality. That combine and, you know, these teams making money, for the most part, it's going to fund sending those kids to Vegas or Orlando or all the other travel that they do. And also, dirty little secret, a lot of these AAU coaches, they pay for their kids to go on unofficial visits. Or they take their time and they drive their own car or what have you to take these kids on unofficial visits. Not many coaches make a whole lot of money on this deal. It's pretty time intensive and sometimes can be money intensive as well. Now, there are a few that have figured out ways to do it. There's no question about that. But a lot of the time, that money gets reinvested right back into the program.
You don't do this unless you have a love for coaching kids and working with kids. And yes, you want to be financially compensated for that, but I don't think that it's a situation where, on the whole, all of these people are doing bad things. And the other part of it is, like, we focus on the highest level, right? We're focusing on the top 50 kids, the top 100 kids who are going to be able to get a scholarship somewhere. They just have to pick where. What we're not focusing on are the kids that will get hurt because they're on the fringes of the Division I level. And so let's break this down kind of mathematically. The numbers that have been reported and that I've heard is that at these regional camps, they want 1,200 kids there, right? Well, there are 352 Division I schools. And if you kind of do the math, you get what, about 3.5 scholarships per year. But that doesn't include kids that transfer out, kids that flunk out, kids that never make it at the Division I level. So there's probably 4 or 5 Division I players that on average each school is going to be bringing in each year. And that the math just doesn't add up, because what you have is 351 schools looking to get 4 or 5 kids coming in. That's way more than the 1,200 kids that are going to be invited to these regional camps. And if those are the only regional camps that coaches are allowed to go, or the only places that coaches are allowed to evaluate in the summer, all of a sudden you're limiting some of these kids that never had a chance to play in front of Division I coaches at the high school level, or impress Division I coaches, playing at their local whatever AAU tournament. So what happens is at a lot of these AAU events, and I'm sure that you've heard plenty of these stories, though, and I'm sure people listening have heard these stories about players on their favorite teams, how they got identified because a coach went to go watch a player on a different team at an AAU tournament, and this kid ended up having a huge game, and all of a sudden he's getting Division I scholarship offers simply because he happened to go for 25 points against, like Cole Anthony or something like that, right? And you're kind of taking away those opportunities from those kids to have a chance to be able to impress and earn that Division I scholarship. I think that while we're trying to eliminate something from the very top of the game, I think what you're hurting are the players at every level below that.
Yeah, and here's the reality. Coaches that want to cheat are going to cheat. They're going to find a way to do it. And if there's a market for it, someone's going to capitalize on it. Like, money, what is it? Money finds value, or whatever it is, whatever that saying is. Like, at the end of the day, these kids are worth more than what they're going to get in college right now, which is a free education. And that's going to make some people mad, but how do I know they're worth more? Because they're able to get more. Like, it's pretty simple. And until that imbalance is gone, you're always going to have cheating. And the only way to stop cheating is to do that or stop keeping score, neither of which seem likely right now. Keeping score seems like a key part of the game, and not paying players seems like a key part of the game. So then we get into this – another thing I want to address real quick is this regional camp thing. I live in Indianapolis. You want to get all the best Indiana teams together. While that might or might not be reasonable for some high school team camp jamboree, one, who's going to run the thing? So it's probably likely still going to be the same event operators who already run things and make money. And then two, that's fine in Indianapolis. It's fine in Chicago, D.C. What are we doing in Iowa? What are we doing in, Mississippi? We hear about all these poor schools, especially in the South, Mississippi, Alabama. Are they going to have money to travel with this team for a high school camp? What about a kid from Nebraska who's really good? He might be the only Division I player in the state. Does a school want to see, this kid playing against Brian Snow? No, they know he's better than Brian Snow. They want to see him playing against real basketball players. And taking that opportunity away just doesn't seem intelligent to me. And I don't see how anyone benefits.
That is the other part about getting the shoe companies involved that I think people are missing here, because they are the ones that invest the money in that infrastructure, in making sure these players can get to these events, and making sure that these events are held in gyms where the hoop isn't hanging off, and there hasn't been, 3 days worth of little kids that are running around with shoes that they didn't take off before they got into the gym, and making sure that the events have refs that actually know what they're talking about, and making sure that there are stats that you can look at. There are like advanced stats for the EYBL where you can look at, what a player's efficiency was, what his offensive rating was. You can get shot charts based off of what happened in EYBL games, and that costs money to pay people to be able to do that. That costs money to be able to host a website that can support that. It costs money to be able to get those kids, the one Division I kid in Nebraska, to Hampton, Virginia, to be able to get him to play in these games. And the shoe companies are willing to invest that money in it. And yes, some of that money kind of creates the wrong incentives for some people that maybe have different priorities, I guess. But on the for the most part, it's a way to kind of allow these players to be in places that they may not be able to get to otherwise. And I think that on the whole, it's probably like more good comes out of having Nike running the EYBL than bad. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. And here's a couple questions I want to bring up that I don't think get brought up because people are just trained to point their finger at the boogeyman, and it's easy to make the boogeyman AAU because most people don't understand it. You know, first of all, let's say 10 to 15 kids a year are influenced directly by the shoe company financially to go to a school. Are we really worried about changing all the rules for 10 to 15 kids a year? Is that really the smart way to go about this?
No, the answer is no.
Yeah. Yeah. And then on top of that, you start getting into everyone's talking about changing July and about fundamentals and all this other crap. Since when did July become about getting better? It's about being seen.
Like that's the whole point. Yes. Go ahead. Continue. I'm sorry.
Like that is the whole purpose of July, is to be seen and be evaluated, not to get better. Like there are times to get better, and it's not, you know, July when you're traveling and playing games and playing in front of coaches and the whole deal. And then the third thing is, and I'll say his name because he put it out there in public, you know, like Eric Reveneau from Georgia Tech and I had a debate on Twitter a few weeks ago. And he said, you know, something to the extent of, you know, he wants change and he thinks there's a lot of good coaches and these camps can really help kids get better. What magical basketball coaches are out there that are able to make kids better in 5 days?
There are none. That's the answer. You don't get better in 5 days. You get better based off of maybe what you pick up in that camp, and you spend, after July, you spend August, September, and October doing those things that you learned in those camps for your high school season, which starts in November.
Yeah. But I mean, like this notion that there's these magical basketball coaches out there, especially when everyone talks, oh, high school basketball coaches. I live in the state, Indiana, with probably the best high school basketball coaching in the country. I see a lot of really poorly coached teams every year, like horrendous. So let's get over that every coach is John Wooden. But this notion that, hey, we're going to put these magical high school coaches with kids for 5 days and suddenly they're going to be a lot better is just ignorant.
I would agree with that 100%. And to your point, the way that the schedule is kind of set up in the summer is that you play November through March for your November through February, November through March for your high school season. Then you have from whenever your high school season ends until April to basically work on your game to be seen again by some of these high school coaches so they can see what kind of development you made in that month and a half, 2 months after your high school season ended. Then after the April live period, you have all of May, all of June, and the start of July to keep working on those things, to get better, to develop, to improve, and then you have July to be seen by the coaches. And the most important thing about this, and one of the, you're an evaluator, tell me if I'm wrong here, Snow, one of the most important parts about that July live period is to be able to see if this kid from April to July has actually gotten better, because that's how you can project whether or not you think a kid is going to end up hitting his ceiling. There are plenty of players out there with a ton of potential. The guys that have a better chance of reaching their potential are the ones that go from the high school season, get better, they look better in April, then they get better, and in July you see them, then they're even better, and they keep adding things to their games and they keep improving. If you don't let coaches have the chance to see what those players are doing and where they're improving and the things that they're getting better on, it makes it that much more difficult to determine what level they should be playing at. And I think the byproduct of all that is going to end up being that we see even more transfers and a bigger, I'm doing air quotes, I know you can't see me because it's a podcast, but air quotes, transfer epidemic. So I don't know, it frustrates me that this is where the discussion has gone and this is the talking point.
It, And the other funny thing for me is I have all these coaches either calling or texting me, and Rob, I'm sure you have much of the same, you know, like complaining about this stuff. And naturally, who do they blame? The NCAA. I've had to point out to them, this is not the NCAA. This is the NABC. This is your organization. How do you guys have no idea what's going on? And what do I get? Blank stares and silence. Because there's a few coaches at the top of the NABC who make the rules. The rest of them apparently don't even pay attention. And a lot of those coaches, you know, the Selfs, the Krzyzewskis, the Roy Williamses, they don't need to be out a lot. They're recruiting 15 guys. You know, they live in a different world than a lot of these coaches, a lot of other coaches, and for the most part have never lived in any other different world. I mean, I guess Self started at what maybe started at Tulsa or Oral Roberts or wherever, but you know, he hasn't been there for 30 years. Like, he doesn't remember what it's like, and quite honestly, Brian doesn't care right now. Roy's been at Kansas and North Carolina. You know, the last time Kay wasn't at Duke was like the 30s.
I don't even know if I was alive.
Yeah, I mean, like, let's be honest here. Like, they're so conditioned to it being a certain way where it's like, this works for us. Let's go with it. And then none of the other coaches in the NABC seem to give a crap, so they just let things happen.
Which would work, I guess, in theory. So the thing that makes this good, or the thing that's valuable about July for coaches at the level like a Mount St. Mary's or like a Siena, some of those kind of mid-major coaches that don't have the travel budget that the power conference programs have, is that you can go see all these kids in one spot, right? Like, if you go to Peach Jam, you're going to see, two or 300 Division I prospects. If you go to Vegas, it's very easy for you to be able to see a wide range of prospects from all over the country for relatively cheap, because you only got to take one flight. You just got to pay for a hotel room and maybe a rental car. You see whatever you got to see. You see the players you need to see. Everybody's in one spot. And I guess that works for the camps, but this goes back to the point of, camps are a terrible place to evaluate, and maybe we should elaborate on that. You do this for a living. What makes it so bad about evaluating in a camp setting?
Well, it's like anything. You put, in general, 10 kids on a team that have never played together, many of which don't know each other, and certainly that don't know each other's games. How can we expect them to play like a unit, like a cohesive unit, when that's the case? It takes time. It takes reps. It takes building. A lot of these AAU teams, you know, you take Team Takeover out of DC. For the most part, the core of that team has been together since about like fifth or sixth grade. Like, they know each other. They're around each other. They're from the same area. You know, teams like Indiana Elite, where I'm from, they have the same team coming up sixth, seventh grade. Now, obviously, you add and subtract pieces, but there's a chemistry involved. There's, you know, they practice. I know people don't think they do, but they do. And then you're going to throw kids into a camp where they don't know their nine other teammates. And on top of that, just the camp atmosphere, you know why you're there. It's to show out. So you're going to be more selfish by human nature. And it just creates for bad basketball. Like, I went to NBA camp this year in Charlottesville, Virginia. Some of the best players in the country were there. It was some of the worst basketball I've ever seen. And there were NBA scouts watching.
I have stopped going to that camp because I've never seen a good basketball game played there.
It can be difficult.
And the one other thing I would add to that is, when you're playing in some of these big AAU tournaments, like I mentioned earlier, you're playing for the goal of winning the event, because there's prestige that comes with being Peach Jam champion. There's no prestige that comes with being the team that goes 6-0 at NBA camp. There's no prestige that comes with being a team that doesn't lose a game at whatever, like the regional, whatever camp. I don't even know what they would call these, the regional camps or the national camps. It's all about doing enough, if you're at the regional camp, to get invited to the national camp. And the only way that happens is if you're the guy that scores 20 points a game, or you're the guy that gets that viral video where you dunk on somebody that ends up going on Ball Is Life or Hoop Mixtape or whatever it is. So, the incentives at those events are very different than the incentives at something like Peach Jam.
The other thing, Rob, is when you play for a lot of these teams, first of all, these kids tend to be very loyal to their summer teams. I mean, you know, I've seen Jabari Parker a lot with the Mac Irvin Fire. Anthony Davis is still very involved with Mean Streets. Bradley Beal Elite donates a ton of money, or Bradley Beal donates a ton of money to a team that was called the St. Louis Eagles and now is called Bradley Beal Elite because he donates so much money to him, spends a lot of time with him. Chris Paul spends a lot of these guys have a tremendous loyalty to those teams. And you build up this loyalty to your teammates, to your friends, to your coaches, to play the right way and to win because you feel responsibility to them. You get into the camp setting, there's no responsibility to anybody else because you're never going to play with that person again. They have nothing invested in you. It's kind of one of the things that I think Duke and Kentucky run into a little bit in the college season is when you have a lot of one-and-dones, you have no sweat equity built up in that program. It, even though they love Duke and they love Kentucky, and that's very, very clear, I think they tend to realize it more afterwards as opposed to in the middle, whereas a kid like a Dante DiVincenzo or a Jalen Brunson or a J.P. McCura or whatever, they're going to have, you know, Gary Clark, they're going to have that extra added responsibility of the college they've been with for 4 years. So you get that in AAU with being with the same team for so long and just the camaraderie you build, whereas in a camp, you just don't have that at all.
Yeah, and I think we will see it come to fruition and some of our concerns come to fruition if the Commission on College Basketball ends up accepting some of these suggestions that have been made by the NABC. All right, Snow, real quick while I have you here, talk to me a little bit about the class of 2019 in this next live period. What are the storylines you're looking forward to? Who are the players that we really need to be paying attention to? And give me some sleepers and some interesting guys that I need to make sure I see at Peach Jam.
Dang, putting me on the spot. You know, class of 2019, it's okay. What's interesting about this class is no one has asserted himself as the number one player or really anything close to it. I think the consensus right now for most is that James Wiseman's the top player, but he hasn't exactly set the world on fire over the last calendar year. Then, you know, you got a kid like Vernon Carey out of Florida. He's much in the same way as Wiseman. The kid who's rising up the charts fast is Jaden McDaniels from Seattle. And he's someone who could play his way into the top spot. So, that you know, those are some of the top guys to watch. Precious Achiuwa out of New York. There's guys. There's a lot of talent, but it hasn't been super productive and consistent talent in this class. And those guys need to continue to step up more. If you start looking at Peach Jam for sleepers, you know, I think you might like the kid Trey Jackson. He's from Detroit. He plays for Mean Streets. He's a kid who's gotten a lot better here recently. You know, he's not necessarily a sleeper. He's got major college interests. But, you know, that's certainly someone to watch. There's a bunch of kids. You know, I can't think of any off the top of my head. But there's a lot that are going to be really good. And you'll have a good time.
Talk to me a little bit about Scotty Lewis and Brian Antoine. They both are at a random little private school in New Jersey, and they are both top 10 players. What do we need to know about those two?
Scotty Lewis is kind of he's one of the better athletes in the class. He's reminiscent of Josh Jackson in that Scotty does everything at an elite level but score. And so if you're looking for the kid who's going to score 25 points a game, that's not him. But what makes him a top 10 player is he plays hard. He passes. He dribbles. He defends. He rebounds. He just does everything at such a high level. And then Brian Antoine, he's just a high-level scorer. And then he knows how to play as well. And both of them are tremendous kids. Both of them play hard. They love the game. And they're two of the more entertaining players in the country.
Last one I got for you. Cole Anthony, Greg Anthony's son. He seems to have kind of solidified as the best guard in this class. I think that's probably fair to say. What makes him special, and is he going to be the next Russell Westbrook?
Next Russell Westbrook?
Putting you on the spot.
Bruh. You went full Goodman.
I did go full Goodman. Cole's no one goes full Goodman. Spring. It's a bad thing to go full Goodman.
You never want to go full Goodman. Cole's had a tremendous spring. He's a big-time athlete. He can score it. He passes just well enough. So, you know, I think he's more of a combo guard who leans, you know, he could, depending on the day, lean two, lean one. But he's just a high-level athlete, tough kid, plays hard, loves playing the game, and is super productive. Russell Westbrook, that's a bit aggressive, but I think he's going to be a kid who's got a long NBA future.
Snow, I appreciate the time. I'm sorry that I'm not going to be able to grace you with my presence.
I'm not.
You're not? You don't like watching basketball games with me?
I don't like seeing you.
That's too bad. I like seeing you. That's why I have you on the podcast so much.
You don't see me on a podcast.
Yeah, but I get to talk to you, man. It's special. You know, I feel a little bit of a connection. I get some of that haterade that I need in my life and I don't get enough of.
You've got a wife. You've got plenty of haterade coming.
Yes, she does hate me. Especially if she listens to the start of this podcast. No, always a pleasure, my man. Safe travels.